Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, a double act completely overshadowed by a single dog at our first ever live show. Finley shook more hands than we did. I tell you, if that dog didn't have four paws, we'd still be there now. I was also very touched, Kieran, about how most of our audience are only too happy to meet Finley, but turned into Kevin and Perry when the Baroness approached. Hello, Mrs. Maguire. Finley was great. Finley was a complete, upstaged everybody.
He did indeed. Yes, it was. We're not blowing our own trumpets, but everybody seemed to enjoy it. And it was great to meet so many people who we've got to know sort of indirectly via the show.
Yeah.
And I met my mate Sledge, who I've not seen since I think about 1984, 1985. Wow. So that was a very surreal experience. It's fantastic times.
It's quite possible that Sledge was one of the people I got hammered with afterwards then. and the slides went down. Your collection of snazzy football shirts went down very well too. So it's questions day, Kieran, and our first question is from somebody we talked about the other night in the live show. Your busy mate, your very best friend, the woman you've got a burner phone just to take text messages from. And the question comes from Robert Whittaker. And Robert says, how likely is it that the recommendation in Tracy Crouch's report will be listened to? I say it like that because that's how the Baroness says it. Ooh, Tracy Crouch. He's had a text from Tracy Crouch. Robert says, I'm one of very many people who have invested a lot of hope in this review, I think, as indeed we have, Kieran, as the best and maybe last chance to save the game's soul. I'd hate to see it captured by vested interest. I think this is a good question, Robert, because it's a very good report. It's a very good in-depth report, and it spoke to many, many, many people from across the world of football. But there's no guarantee that it will become law, though Tracy is very optimistic the last time you spoke to her.
Yes, I mean, I think Robert's comments do indicate that he's wary that vested interests, and by that we mean Premier League owners, are using public relations agencies. They're trying to get lawyers to pick holes in the report, with a view to diluting it and just perhaps giving a few crumbs from the table. They want control of the game. I think that's indicated by the fact that the Sneaky Six still refuse to sign a commitment to only have clubs qualify for European competition on merit. They still have this belief that they should somehow do it through not winning football matches.
Yeah.
So that is a cause for concern. But in terms of the main issues of the report, you know, Tracy herself has said that this isn't an a la carte menu where you can pick and choose which elements of it that you want. It's got to be really an all or nothing if the government is going to be committed to a comprehensive review of the national game. I was on a discussion panel with somebody who was opposed to it, was saying, you know, government regulation doesn't work, and it's not been 100% successful with Ofcom. It's not been 100% successful with the water regulators, with the energy regulators. And I said, I absolutely accept that. But this is therefore why should we have? Well, this is a case of you're not going to turn it down to zero. This is not going to be a cure-all for football.
Yeah.
But what it can do is it can turn down the dial.
Yeah,
because otherwise his argument was false, because we have police, but we still have crime. So does that mean we should get rid of the police? I don't think anybody's saying that. So there is certainly a pushback, but the central tenets of the report, things such as a general manager, let's not call it a regulator. Yeah, they have general managers in the NFL, yeah, and the NBA. America is the home of the free. And yet they still believe that having a person who can be independent of individual clubs has some benefit, and you can see the merits on that. Clubs act in terms of self-interest, and that's fully understandable.
Yeah,
you know, if Steve Parish did not do what was best for Crystal Palace, you'd be upset and angry, and I'd be the same in respect to Brighton. So we absolutely understand why clubs are doing what they're doing, but sometimes to be a step removed and to be able to oversee the benefits for this amazing sport, which unites us like nothing else, is worthy of some extra support, which doesn't necessarily apply for other industries. And therefore, I think the report itself merits some support.
It certainly does unite us. I found myself being polite to fans of quite a few clubs I've got no time for the other night. There's a couple of Brighton fans there. I think the smile went to my eyes, Kieran. I don't know. But you're quite right to say the argument that if you can't do everything, then do nothing is a spurious argument. And I think what the Tracy Crouch review has shown, and I don't think anybody would have predicted the Chelsea situation while the review was being formulated, but what's happened at Chelsea is put into stark relief the fact that we do need protection. We do need to make sure that that sort of situation doesn't happen in the future. And this looks like one of the last hopes of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Prime Minister did say over the weekend that he was in favour of a regulator. He also said that Ukraine should qualify for the World Cup, which might upset a few people in Scotland or Wales or elsewhere, and that they should host the next World Cup, which I don't think is necessarily a good idea, because you know when you've got a whole country which has been bombed to smithereens by a lunatic, football grounds are not a priority. It does seem to have support at senior level in government, and the EFL has I think has read the room and is in favour of some form of oversight, and the Premier League's sort of initial very coordinated opposition to the fan-led review has been noticeably quieter since we've seen what's happened in respect of Chelsea, because one of the things the report said, and I keep on saying it, there are too many clubs who are one owner or one owner decision away from oblivion, and by having a more sustainable game, then clubs are in a position, if an owner makes one bad decision, potentially you can stand on your own two feet.
Yeah, I know this is not a football pod, Kieran, but I think I understand those people who say that Ukraine should qualify for the World Cup, but I think the team that might not want to do that is Ukraine. I think they would rather do it by beating Scotland,
yeah,
to be perfectly honest. And we've seen that some of their players, like Yarmolenko, for example, I've played on, obviously in great distress, we learn from their teammates, but they've played on, and I think they would rather win a football game and do it properly, because the logic to the argument is that you might as well give them the World Cup now, essentially. But I do understand why it would be good to see them there, but also it would be good to see Scotland there. We did learn the other night, Kieran, though, interestingly, from a high-powered legal source who told you that there are circumstances in which Boris Johnson could be considered the owner of Chelsea Football Club at the moment and might fail the fit and proper persons test.
Well, yes, a well-known sports QC has suggested that in terms of the Premier League's owners and directors test, how do you define an owner or director? It's somebody capable of making executive decisions. And if the government ultimately is the organisation which says yes or no to Chelsea's next owner, and let's face it, we don't know whether that is the case or not, but if that was the case, then does that mean in the light of what we have seen with regards to the Newcastle position, that could the government therefore be deemed to be an owner indirectly because it's involved in executive decision making at that such a level? And therefore, would somebody at the government have to step forward to satisfy the test? Which would be quite ironic, given the number of hoops that PIF went through in order to distance themselves from the Saudi Arabian government.
Yeah, we had a smattering of Norwich shirts at the live gig the other night, so they'll be interested in the answer to this question, which comes from Owen Brady. Owen Brady says, as it appears they may be going down again, how sustainable is it for a club like Norwich to keep going up and down the leagues? And I suppose the worry is, you add to that caveat, Kieran, the fact that eventually they won't keep coming up again, will they?
Well, they have been promoted on a regular basis. If we take a look at Norwich over the course of the last decade, overall, they've made a profit of £33 million. Now, for clubs that have spent any time in the EFL, a championship, to have those type of numbers, I think is testament to the fact that under Delia Smith, perhaps out of necessity, because she's been honest that her and the rest of the board don't have significant private resources to fund the club, that they've therefore adopted a sustainable model which involves either player sales or utilisation of parachute payments to reinvest in the squad at a modest level. And that has worked. So I think they did come quite close to running out of parachute payments. I think the second last time that they were promoted, but they did go up, and they do seem to have an approach which is that they're not going to gamble with the club's future by trying to ensure that they achieve promotion, but they will have a competitive budget rather than what they would perhaps others would perceive to be a sensational budget, which we have seen in respect of other clubs who have crashed and burned and have got into trouble on the back of that.
Now, Mark Collins has a new angle on the stadium valuation discussion, which we've been having more or less for 2 years. Mark says, how much is a football stadium worth if the club who plays there goes out of business? Does it plummet without a team to fill it?
I think, Mark, the issue would be location, 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 because there are some grounds which are out of town which might have covenants and are unable to be used for other purposes, which would have a negative impact upon the valuation. If I look at my own club, Brighton, when we played at the Goldstone Ground, and I know you've said similar in respect of Selhurst, it was a shithole. But it was our shithole, and we did have that affection for it.
Yeah, yours was a worse shithole than our shithole. Yeah. Still is a shithole. That's the problem. Ours is a shithole with some charm, but we've still got it. You've now moved to your lovely Quinoa Windmill Stadium, which is it probably has less charm than the original shithole, but still.
Yeah, I remember we were at Plough Lane on Thursday night. Now, I thought the new AFC Wimbledon Stadium was absolutely fantastic.
Incredible,
the facilities have there. But we're also old enough to have been to the old Plough Lane, which did win the Worst Toilets I've Ever Visited award in my sort of 50 years of schlepping up and down the country, watching us lose away from home when I went there on a Tuesday night in 1984. To see us get bullied 1-0 by John Fashanu and co. I think in terms of the stadium, ours was sold for £6 million out of necessity. Now, that's the problem. The value, it was then subsequently sold for about four times that much within a year by the developers who bought it off the club. And I think that's the consideration. You might be able to buy a football ground for a club which is out of business at a fire sale price, and then flip it round and use it for redevelopment if there is planning permission for it to have some alternative use. If we take a look at what's happened at Gig Lane in Bury, you know, some people have said that that Steve Dale had some sort of Machiavellian plan to utilise Gig Lane, to try to use it for other purposes, but the local council made it very clear that they would be extremely awkward with regards to that. Gig Lane has now been sold, I think, for a relatively low fee. I think it's somewhere in the region of about £1 to £1.5 million, and therefore, on the back of that, we are both hoping that the two parties involved in terms of the split in the Bury fan base will be able to come together to have a club which is sustainable at that ground. So the value can fall if there is no alternative use. If it is allowed to be used for commercial, retail, residential use, then ultimately it's a plot of land. You know, if Chelsea went bust, Stamford Bridge, if it was knocked down and used for high-rise flats, would be worth an absolute fortune.
Mm. I'm going to throw in two nominations, Kieran, for the worst toilets back in the day. Fulham, the old Fulham away end, they were shocking. Right. They were shocking. But Hibs back in the early 90s, was pretty much four walls. With a little gap underneath the wall, so you're actually peeing underneath the wall, which would be fine, except it was the top of the terrace, and at the bottom of the terrace was a catering stall, and the rivers of piss were basically running into the boxes of Scotch pies that were being stored at the back, which was that's definitely high on the list of terrible toilets. Yes. I always think the thing with those Fulham toilets as well is that I'm not particularly tall, but when you're able to see over the wall that you're urinating on, which is known as toilet. That's why when people talk about, I really missed the good old days. Like, missed some of the good old days.
Yes.
Now, this is a subject, Kieran, we talked a lot about at the live show, on stage and mostly off stage, I think, because it's clearly something that's energised most fans. And I have to say there was no animosity at all towards Newcastle fans in these discussions.
No.
But there's certainly, it's part of the bigger picture. And Jamie Ballack has asked this question. Jamie says, I'm interested to know if you think the takeover of Newcastle could actually speed up the development of a Super League, not necessarily because Newcastle want it, but because the traditional big clubs increasingly struggle already with state-backed clubs like City and PSG. So Barca and Madrid, for example, have financial struggles. Ajax, Porto and many other clubs are dwindling powers. There hasn't been an Italian Champions League winner since 2010. Will these traditional big clubs argue that with FFP not working, they can't compete and that therefore their survival depends on a Super League where they set the rules? It's an interesting take, that, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, and it absolutely ties in with the comments that we've seen from the likes of Agnelli and Perez. But I do think the threat from these other clubs is to a certain element overplayed. Right. Between them, how many times have City and PSG, and now Newcastle, how many times have they actually won the Champions League?
Yeah,
it's a big fat zero.
Yeah.
Whereas Real Madrid have won it in the last, four times in the last decade. Now, what Real Madrid fear is that they might not have the procession, they might not have the dynasty that they've had historically and which they believe that is theirs by right because they are Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And if you actually take a look, they'll say, well, hold on, Manchester City have just topped the Deloitte Money League, and they're absolutely right. But then if you take a look at the Deloitte Money League, on how many occasions has Real Madrid topped it over the course of the last couple of decades? And it's loads. So old money fears new money. And the merits of the Super League, and let's be honest, from a business point of view, Super League made a lot of sense for people who want to make money out of football. So we aren't in that classification. We are dismissed. We are being referred to as legacy fans.
Yeah, yeah.
We're out of touch with modern football and so on. And if that's the perception of some people, then fine. And they're the people that are claiming that young people aren't interested in football. But all I can say is I teach football finance at university. there wasn't football finance courses at university 10 years ago. There wasn't any 5 years ago as far as undergraduate teaching is concerned. We now have places like UCFB, which has got campuses at Wembley and the Etihad and so on. So that's indicative that young people are interested. I run an undergraduate course where we have to turn people away.
Yeah.
So it's oversubscribed. So I think the claims of the death of football amongst today's young people is a complete fallacy. You can argue they've been priced out of it in terms of physically attending matches, but that's a separate issue. Then get your pricing right and you've got the engagement. Do they consume the matches in a different way? Yes, they do. Do they spend more time playing on FIFA than they do watching matches? Yes, they do. But then I used to spend more time on computer games when I was young than physically going watching matches, because you only can watch a match once a week for 90 minutes, whereas yeah. you can play Space Invaders, you know, as many times as you want, and that's why I got a 2-2 at university.
I just wondered when the last time anybody played Space Invaders was, Kieran. It may be in a postmodern, ironic, legacy fan type console. I used to love, funny enough, sit down. The sit down Space Invaders I was much better at than the stand up Space Invaders. The legacy fan thing, I think, is going to turn into a badge of honour in the next year or so. I think people will claim that. And I think it was interesting as well. I was pleasantly surprised by the amount of people under the age of 30 that were there on Thursday night. And also, if you look in the Pawson's Arms, I know I'm talking about friends and family here and second generation Palace fans in fans, but there are plenty of young people. They're just as obsessed with football. Like you say, they get their results off their phone rather than off teletext. So it's just like you say, it's different. But the obsession with football is still there. Adam Nixon has a question about broadcasting deals. And Adam Nixon says, with Sky's EFL TV deal, Leagues 1 and 2 are often neglected. So might the EFL member clubs be better off if the deal was sold by league rather than collectively?
Possibly. I mean, under the terms of the present EFL TV deal, clubs in the Championship get 80% of all the money. Clubs in League 1 get 12%, and clubs in League 2 get 8%. And that means that if you are a club in League One, the combination of the money from the EFL deal plus the solidarity payments from the Premier League are worth around about £1.5 million per club. Could League One sell the rights at a higher price? Here, I think we've got a bit of a problem because football is being squeezed. You know the Premier League dominates, and you know, no disrespect to matches in the Championship. Once you've had sort of two or three matches from the Premier League, watching it over the telly over the weekend, then you've got the Champions League matches as well. Are you going to watch, you know, even one of the matches at the top of the Premier League? If it's Bournemouth versus Fulham, is it you know, Huddersfield versus Blackburn? I don't know how big an audience there is generally for those, and ultimately it's eyeballs which determine prices. You drop down into League One, and again, you know, we've got huge affection for many of the clubs in League One. Yeah, we thanks to the kind host AFC Wimbledon, and you know, we've been offered a few gigs which we'll talk about at some other point on the show, from other League One clubs as well. So we've got a huge affection for those, but you know, who's going to watch the matches in terms of the number of people, both domestically and overseas? And I know some people will say, well, hold on, we've got Sunderland and Sheffield Wednesday, and you know, possibly we could have Derby County in that league next season, Ipswich. You know, there's lots of, for what, you know, for legacy fans such as us, teams that we consider to be big teams in that division, but I'm not sure how much money as a 24 they could generate. And then if you drop down into League Two, again, that's going to be a struggle. Scunthorpe versus Oldham, who's going to watch it apart from Scunthorpe and Oldham fans? And they already, a lot of them consume some of that product via iFollow, which I think has been one of the successes to come out of COVID in terms of both the quality of the service and pitched at a price that people are willing to pay.
It's an interesting point. I was watching, my grasp of time flying recently is very shaky, so I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but Colchester versus Forest Green. I think it was last Monday, so as the international break started, watching Colchester versus Forest Green. Two teams going really well in League Two. It wasn't a particularly brilliant game, but I was happy to watch it because it was football. But there was a very sparse crowd, whether or not that was because it was on TV. It was a Monday night, so obviously there weren't that many Forest Green fans there. And Sky, it's almost lackadaisical the way they present the League One and League Two games. I know the Championship, they get ultra excited by, but you almost feel that they're doing a duty putting these games on rather than actually highlighting or championing those particular leagues, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think Sky overall do a pretty damn good job.
Absolutely, I quite agree.
And including the lower leagues. But why were you watching that match, Kevin? It's because it was an international weekend, and under normal circumstances, if it had been, Burnley versus Leicester, a match where you've got no particular emotional investment, I suspect you would have chosen to watch that as opposed to Forest Green versus Colchester if that was on another channel. So, I think it would be a challenge. I'm not saying it will be impossible, but I think they'd struggle to get much more money than they do at present.
Yeah, I can find a reason to watch most Premier League games in relation to what happens to Palace. It's like, I better watch this Leicester game, because if they win, we'll drop down a point. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by Pact Coffee. Big coffee is bad coffee, full of underpaid farmers and low-quality, over-roasted beans, all of which just leaves a bad taste in the mouth. Pact is changing the coffee industry from the grounds up.
From paying a price that's more than fair to knowing farmers on a first-name basis, Pact builds long-term relationships that flourish, putting the needs of their partners first and providing coffee that's personal to their customers. With Pact, you'll get award-winning specialty coffee, freshly roasted to perfection for your order, and ground just moments before it's shipped. There's over 15 different coffees on the menu at any given time to choose from, including Great Taste 2020 and 2021 winners.
So, make a pact to make better coffee now. Price of Football listeners get a free V60 and filter kit when they first sign up to a Pact plan. Just go to pactcoffee.com. That's pactcoffee.com. And enter the code POF at the checkout to create your flexible coffee subscription and get that free brewing kit. Make a pact to make better coffee. Better for the farmer, better for the consumer, better for the planet. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Our next question comes from Tom Jones. I'm going to apologise to Tom here. I spent 10 minutes coming up with funny Tom Jones stuff. Then I thought, no, that wouldn't be fair to Tom. And then I thought maybe Tom would want me to do that. But now I decided I'm not going to do that. I'm not. It's the temptation. I'm itching. Every sinew in my body wants to make some sort of comment. And karma will probably, yeah. But that's not unusual. Anyway.
Hey!
Tom says, and it's a question I really like, actually. And I think a lot of our listeners will really like it as well. Tom says, I often listen with great interest to Salford City co-owner Gary Neville talking about the business side of the game. And he had some very strong views regarding Derby County and Mel Morris. He absolutely did. However, says Tom, my nan taught me that those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Quite right, Nan. So with that in mind, says Tom, can you talk us through Salford City's finances, what their losses are, and how come Mr. Neville thinks it's okay for his club to spend mad amounts of money on promotion, but not other clubs? So this is something that has come up before. I think our next live gig, as I'll mention at the end of the show, will be at Accrington. Again, we know that the owner of Accrington has said similar things about Gary Neville. It's got under the radar slightly, so I'll be interested to hear what you've got to say about Tom's question.
Yes, yeah. But more importantly, in terms of people in glass houses, did you know that New York has the highest number of telescope sales of any city on the planet?
No.
And the reason for this, because you might think, hold on, there's a lot of light pollution in New York. I didn't know it was famous for astronomy. So I did some background work on this, and it's actually due to the number of glass apartments. Yeah, and people use a telescope to look into other people's houses.
Oh, yeah.
So that's fun fact of the day. Why they're looking into other people's houses, we don't know. But New York is renowned for telescope sales.
Possibly because other people's houses have got a bigger TV screen than theirs, Kieran.
They
could be watching Pornhub through there. They could be watching somebody through a window get undressed on Pornhub on a big TV. I don't know. I do know that 2/3 of the world's cranes are currently in Dubai. There you are.
Oh, really?
Yes. But anyway, enough of this brief sorbet before the answer to the Gary Neville question.
Right. Yes, Salford City. Gary Neville and the rest of the class of 92, they acquired Salford City acquired their interest in 2014-15, along with a guy called Peter Lim, who is, I think he's a Malaysian businessman, a very successful businessman.
Yeah, do you know, Kieran, if he's related to Jerry Lim, the chap who tried to buy a palace all those years ago? I know it's a fairly common name, but...
I'm not certain.
Right,
I'll do some ferreting.
Yeah. No, don't do that. Do some research.
I'll do some research. yes.
You've got your telescope to worry about without starting to ferret as well.
So, Salford City... over the course of the last couple of years, and they've, first of all, they've not yet published their 2021 account, so we can't say how bad the year of practical lockdown and behind closed doors impacted them. But in the two previous seasons, they lost around about 65 to 70 grand a week, which is a lot. They had the biggest losses of any club in League Two in 2020. Oh, right. Actually... If you take a look at the total overall losses of League Two, Salford City contributed 1/3 of them. Oh. Remember, they are one out of 24 clubs.
Yeah.
So you know the club clearly has funded spending of money. In terms of wages, for every £100 of revenue, Project 92, which is the parent club of Salford City, has paid £121 in wages. As far as I can see, I think they were the only club that season where wages exceed revenue. So again, you know, this is indicative of a club which is living beyond its means. It doesn't have a sustainable model. I've watched the Class of Two documentary on Salford. I think the first two series were on the BBC.
Yeah.
The latest series is on Sky. It was a very engaging and interesting show. And I think, you know, Gary Neville, who who I admire in many ways, especially for the way that he has spoken up in respect of many social issues. And I think he was a major contributor to the opposition to the Super League. So yeah, I've got a lot of admiration for Gary Neville in many ways. He said, "We're in a hurry to get to League One and the Championship. And if it involves buying our way to success, in effect, then so be it." And I think this is where Tom's comments about, you know, is he therefore adopting double standards when being critical to Mel Morris could perhaps have some merit. You know, certainly, you know, the numbers, the more the numbers that I look at, you know, they had the second highest investment in player signings in 2020 compared to all of the clubs in League Two. They're only outspent by Mansfield Town, somewhat recently, strange. Yeah. And then you say, well, okay, so where is the money coming from? If you look into the accounts, you see that the club is effectively being funded by a shareholder. Now, this shareholder is not named. This shareholder has put in over £10 million in loans into Salford City. Is it likely to be Nicky Butt? I suspect not. Is it likely to be Paul Scholes? I suspect not. Could it be Peter Lim? Well, as you know, I don't gamble very often, but I would be pretty certain it's going to be Peter Lim, who appears to be sort of the silent partner in all of this. You know, Gary Neville is very much front of house, and clearly he's a professional presenter who does articulate himself very well. But it looks as if a third party is effectively funding this ambition of getting Salford City up the divisions, and that's fine. Provided, as we've said before, somebody doesn't get bored or their personal circumstances don't change, because it's not sustainable. If you're losing 70 grand a week, or the thick end of 70 grand a week in League Two, you know, where are you going to find the money if Peter Lim or whoever this benefactor turns around and says, "I've done it for 3 or 4 years, I've got a bit bored now, yeah, we've not got into League One, I'm off ski."
You'd expect, though, that Butt, Scholes, Neville would be able to locate somebody else to replace that sort of person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd also suspect it'd be very difficult for Butt, Scholes and Neville to walk away from the local club in a PR. They can't get bored, because that would be terrible PR.
No. Yeah, yeah.
I do agree. I've met Gary Neville a couple of times. I respect him as well, and I quite admire him. And he has a lot of good things to say about the life of the world outside football as well, in terms of the environment, the ecology, etc. But those figures you're talking about, £121 for every £100 of income in wages, that's the sort of numbers that we're talking about in the Championship. We talk about the Championship as a basket case. So that's a big discrepancy, is it, for a League Two club?
It is. I mean, and a lot of them are, you know, high 80s, 90s and so on, but it does appear to be the highest. And I think, you know, Gary Neville would argue, well, you've got to remember where Salford City have come from. You know, five, six years ago, they were three divisions below, effectively being watching by 20 men and a dog. Yeah, yeah. And now they've managed to generate a whole new audience for the club and a new fan base. And he believes that's sustainable. And that's fine. But ultimately, I think Salford City have a natural level of fan base, and to try to grow that will be a challenge, because Manchester's pretty chocker full of football clubs already.
Well, that's the thing. They were back in the day, in the late 40s, 50s, 60s, they were very famous locally as an amateur club. They won virtually everything there was to win as an amateur club. You do wonder what the ambition is, because you think at the moment, and this in no way is meant to be disrespectful to Tranmere, but you kind of think that the most Accrington could hope for as a club is that they would, you know, they could get to the League One, they could get to the Championship, and then hopefully play their games on a Friday night, so that City and United fans would go along to see Salford before going to see their games. Because as you say, it's hard to see them get to a situation where they can grow their fan base. And then, of course, there's also Oldham and Bury and Rochdale and all sorts of other clubs around there to compete with as well.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, our next question comes from Thomas Kiernan. And Tomás says, I understand the Republic of Ireland recently turned down the opportunity to be sponsored by a gambling firm. What is the likely cost across one international window with three fixtures as they were left without a sponsor?
I don't think it would be really moving the dial very much at all, because if you take a look at these three fixtures, they're not major ones. The Republic aren't in the playoffs for the World Cup. So we're probably talking a five-figure deal at most. You might get a few grand. The glory days of the Republic that you and I perhaps have a very romantic attachment to, sadly have gone for a while. I did see the Republic play in the 2016 Euros, which was just a great night out. It wasn't even ruined by the football, because the football skills are completely irrelevant.
Interrupted by the football, yeah.
Interrupted by the football, yes. So I think it's a decent thing to do, and they deserve some credit for it. Certainly, issues in terms of gambling and football, those issues are continuing. And I can't really say much more than that, because I'm involved in something to do with it.
Oh, okay. Right. Are you the new face of Betfair? Are you the new Ray Winston? that'd be great. What would we do with the pod, Kieran, if it turned out you, Ray Winston, and Jeff Stelling with the new face of a brand new betting company? You'd tell me beforehand, Kieran, wouldn't you? Our penultimate question comes from Tom McCormick. Good result for Republic yesterday, by the way, against Belgium.
Yeah.
Tom McCormick says, I found it very interesting watching Ben Brereton Diaz's sudden profile in Chile and its effect on Blackburn Rovers. My friend tells me that the club have gained tens of thousands of new followers on social media, mostly from Chile. Can the club monetize this new audience? We're used to Man United, Arsenal, etc., expanding their global reach. But is there much benefit to a club the size of Blackburn?
I've got to be honest, and the answer is no, because I think in terms of Tom's question, if we take a look at Manchester United claim to have 1.1 billion fans around the globe. And yet their total revenue in 2019, which was pre-COVID year, 627 million. So Manchester United are making 55 pence per fan per year. Now, if you put that into the context of Blackburn Rovers, if they got an extra 20,000 fans, at most they get an extra 10 grand. Right, but I honestly don't think they'd even get that much.
Right.
The problem with social media likes is that there is zero cost to the person doing the liking. It's a nil entry fee. If I go and follow somebody on Twitter, it doesn't cost me a dime.
Yeah.
They say they've got followers now on. It could be on the YouTube channel and it could be on their Twitter feed, but actually trying to monetize those, all of the money made from Twitter and made from YouTube tends to go into the pockets of companies such as Alphabet who own YouTube rather than the content producers themselves. You have to have a huge number of streams. We've just seen Spotify announce the number of people that have earned more than, I think, £1 million or $1 million from them. And yes, we'd all happily take $1 million, but actually, 99.3% of people who have accounts on Spotify make less than a grand a year or something like that. Yeah. So I think you have to be a little bit cautious. The Xanadu that everybody's been trying to achieve with regards to social media is to convert likes into dollars. Nobody's really managed it yet, unless they are a mega brand. And even so, for the likes of Manchester United, it's not big bucks.
So you don't think there'll be thousands of young Chilean football fans walking about with Blackburn shirts on?
I think it's highly unlikely, because remember, there's English players, there's Irish players that we like who have gone to play overseas, and do you look out for the results of their clubs with perhaps a little bit more interest than otherwise? Yes. Would I go and buy a shirt for that club? Probably not.
Well, that's only because the Baroness has told you not to buy any more shirts.
Well, she didn't actually realise I had so many shirts until I took them along to the gig on Thursday.
Yes, it's very interesting watching her hanging them all up. It went on for quite some time. Our final question comes from Roderick De Vries. And if Nigel Havers has not played a character called Roderick De Vries at some stage in his career, I don't know what he has played. It's a fantastic name. Roderick, I don't know your financial details, but with a name like that, you're halfway to a bank loan already, aren't you? Mr. De Vries is here. Just give him the money. It's fine. Roderick says, everyone knows that failure, muck-ups and misery are much more interesting than success, hence your podcast. I don't know if he's
in. That's a compliment.
I don't know. I looked at this for 5 minutes yesterday thinking, is he implying that he listens because the chance of muck up and misery is much more obvious on this part? I don't know. Anyway. But Roderick says, I wonder, were there any clubs in the EFL that actually did quite well financially despite the pandemic?
Yes. I think failure, muck ups and misery could be the section from my 1980s autobiography of me in nightclubs. It was a spectacularly bad period of my life. And Sledge will vouch for that.
Why is he called Sledge, by the way?
Well, his real name is Robert. And,
oh, lovely. There you go. That explains it.
That explains it, exactly. Sort of in the early 80s, the best parties, the best clubs were on the Brighton gay scene because it was pre-HIV, it was really hedonistic, there was a lot of booze, there was a lot of drugs, if you like that type of things. The music was always great. So we'd always used to get invited. We used to work the bars and so on. So you get invited there. And one night, we both went to this party and, having a good time, and he disappeared. He must have disappeared for about 40 minutes. I'm spent 40 minutes getting chatted up by hairdressers and married photocopier salesmen in their 40s. I go, for Christ's sake, Robert, what are you doing? And then he comes back and I said, what have you been up to? He had this really big grin on his face and he told me what he'd been up to. So after that, I called him Foreman Bob, he loved it. Yeah, he absolutely loved it after that. I used to go around to his. I knew his family. I used to go around to his mum's, and we used to go and play on the Sinclair Spectrum together. Yeah, we were pretty rock and roll at times as well. And he says, for Christ's sake, don't call me Foreman Bob because she doesn't know. And I go, yeah, of course not. So I called him Sledge. Yeah, and she said, why? Why do you call him Sledge, Kieran? And I said, oh, he loves Sister Sledge. Yeah, when we're on the dance floor, he's always dancing to Sister Sledge. So he kept that. But so I've not seen him for the best part of 40 years. And it was just wonderful to meet up. And he's not changed a bit. I have.
All right. So things haven't gone downhill for Sledge then?
No. Hey!
Shall we answer Roderick's question?
Oh, yes.
whilst we say goodbye to that BAFTA dwindling into the distance.
Yes, so as far as Roderick was concerned, we've already mentioned Norwich. I think they did pretty well to get promoted again. They were canny enough. They had plenty of player sales. And also, the other club, which I think did remarkably well in the pandemic, was Brentford. And again, this is because the club was not hugely reliant on matchday income. It had a player recruitment and development model, and it utilised that to ensure that it could get promoted on a sustainable level. And I think one of the things which is really exciting about the EFL Championship this season is that we do have clubs such as Luton and Coventry who are, and Blackburn have had a bit of a dip, but who were genuinely in contention for one of the top places. And that you know, sort of proves that spending smart and having a good culture and management style at a club is just as important as an owner who's prepared to write blank checks. And you know, I think I'm hoping that this season could be indicative of more clubs saying, well, if Luton and Coventry and Blackburn can do it, well, perhaps we can take a more sustainable approach.
Now, to those Rochdale fans listening, don't worry, we haven't forgotten that we promised to donate all the profits from our first ever live show to you, and that will be happening. There's a cheque on its way, or I don't know how Guy transfers money, because he's not done it very often, but there will be a cheque on the way to Rochdale. We've had a top-level meeting and decided that we're going to keep the money for the next couple of gigs, and the next one will be in Accrington. We just have to decide a date. It will be hopefully around about the 10th of May, but we'll announce that as soon as possible on social media. And then we're looking at Peterborough, Plymouth, and two or three others across the country. So hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have got to your corner of the land and we'll have given you an opportunity to come and see our show as well, and an opportunity for us to come and meet you. And we're looking forward to it very much. Until that time, and until our next pod, if you'd like to donate some money to our Always Free to Air pod, then that would be very welcome. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have any questions for our next questions pod or the one after that, or the one after that, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. That's the email address. You may have to wait a while because we had so many questions the other night that we couldn't get round to. We did promise that we would answer some of them on the pod in future. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Thanks, first of all, folks, for all of you people that came to AFC Wimbledon and the kind words you said before, during and after the show and continue to do so on social media. We're genuinely touched by it all. If you want to support us via Patreon, that's one fantastic method. If you just want to give us some good karma and help us in the charts as far as podcasts are concerned, you can do that by going to your podcast app, and if you can give us a review, you can give us 5 stars. It helps us. It helps the algorithm. Producer Guy understands the algorithm. Myself and Kevin, when he talks about it to us, we just nod and just look at each other. Have we nodded enough now?
I don't even nod. I've given up nodding.
But it doesn't matter what you say. You could say that you would rather the show was presented by Sir Les Patterson and Simon Cowell, and I think that'd be a great show. I think there's a market for that show on Football Finance. But it doesn't make a blind bit of difference to myself and Kevin, and it doesn't make a blind bit of difference, perhaps by all accounts, to the ratings either.
If you don't know who Sir Les Patterson is, Google him. He's one of he's one of the great roster of characters that Barry Humphries has. He's very, very funny. I think he could probably handle it on his own without Simon. I don't think Simon Cowell would enjoy that very much. Which is a reason, of course, for making it happen. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.